And good afternoon, and welcome to a Juneau Afternoon on KTOO in Juneau. My name is Jamie Waste. I'll be your host this afternoon on a nice snowy day here in the capital city. Today we're going to be talking with Frank Rue about Saturday's Southeast Alaska Land Trust fundraiser featuring Mark Kelly. We'll be getting details about Saturday's Girl Scout auction and dinner. We'll also be getting an update on the current production at Perseverance Theater called The Mountaintop. And we're going to be getting a preview of tonight's Alaska Design Forum with guests from Seattle's Lead Pencil Studio. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more coming up on a Juneau Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A bold project to try to reintroduce salmon in the upper reaches of the Columbia River is being introduced by tribes. Reporter Steve Jackson has more.
While salmon runs seem to be making a gradual comeback in the Columbia River, no salmon have been able to make it past Grand Coulee or Chief Joseph Dam since 1942. A new paper from the Columbia Basin Tribes and Canadian First Nations lays out a phased approach that would first assess the viability of reintroduction. The project will be coordinated by the Upper Columbia United Tribes, or UCUT. UCUT Executive Director and Colville Tribal Member D.R. Michelle says it's a huge undertaking, but if successful, will provide many benefits.
There's a lot of tribal benefits just on where we, you know, for thousands of years, where we are, how we use the river, and our ties to it. But we're looking at this more as a regional benefit. It's going to benefit everybody who lives along the river and everybody who comes here to visit. There's a lot of opportunity in a good functioning ecosystem with fish above those facilities.
Phase one of the plan will consist of a feasibility study to determine habitat availability, suitability, and salmon potential above Grand Coulee. A 30-day public comment period on the plan will kick off the process. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Lower Brule Sioux elders and Treaty Council members are meeting in the aftermath of an investigative report to discuss allegations of misappropriation of funds by their tribal leaders. Jim Kent visited the reservation in South Dakota and spoke with community members about the report.
The Lower Brule Treaty Office is where elders and their younger supporters gather to discuss issues impacting tribal members directly related to treaties with the federal government. But this is also where elders voice their opinions and concerns about current-day tribal issues. Tonight, that conversation centers on allegations of mismanagement by longtime tribal chairman Mike Jandrew. It's a situation Janice Bad Horse Larson says is nothing new.
I've been fighting this since the 70s. My sister and other people, we've been fighting, and I left in the 80s.
Larson returned to Lower Brule in 2000 to find nothing had changed.
I just said, well, I might as well join the fight again. Pick up from where I left off. Well, this time I was more education and all this and that.
Cheryl Estes Scott also left the reservation and was surprised when she returned in 2008 by what she refers to as tyranny. Scott says her biggest eye-opener came when she was president of the Tribal College.
I had gone to the council to present a petition of over 400 signatures to get 25 acres of land for the college. Mike made the statement himself, this is not going before council.
Cheryl Estes Scott hopes the Human Rights Watch report, which Mike Jandrew has discounted, will at least result in a change of tribal leadership. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Native leaders in education, business, health, and other areas are testifying today before the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs. The committee is focusing on Indian Country priorities for the 114th Congress. U.S. Senator John Barrasso will be leading the meeting. The Wyoming senator was elected chair of the committee this month. Barrasso is focusing on jobs, energy, natural resource development, healthcare, education, and tribal self-governance. He's the fourth ranking member in the Senate Republican leadership as chairman of the Senate Republican Policy Committee. Barrasso addressed tribal leaders last week when he gave the congressional response to the State of Indian Nations address, where he told leaders there's much work to be done and in a bipartisan way. Tune in this week for continued coverage of the priorities hearing. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Are you an experienced journalist who can lead radio producers and reporters in best practices and bring Native voices to a wide audience? Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation seeks an executive producer, program manager. Full description at NativeAmericaCalling.com.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Up first today on a Juno afternoon, the topic is the Southeast Alaska Land Trust and the fundraiser that they have scheduled for this Saturday evening with featuring Mark Kelly and his photography. So the event is, like I said, this Saturday at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall at 7 o'clock. Tickets, $15 in advance, $20 at the door. In the studio, Frank Rue, Executive Director of the Land Trust, and Juno's very own photojournalist Mark Kelly is also here as well. So, Frank, welcome to both of you, for starters. And, Frank, do you want to speak briefly to the fundraiser and why you're doing it, and maybe we can talk a little bit about the Land Trust as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I am very glad to be here and very appreciative of Mark's support for the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. The Land Trust is a private nonprofit that works at conserving lands throughout Southeast Alaska that have conservation values, recreation values, cultural values. And we're a private nonprofit. We work with private landowners and public landowners to conserve those important values. And so something like a fundraiser like this is really important, our ability to find those places, work with landowners, and conserve them for the long term and steward them. So I really appreciate Mark coming out and helping us. And I think people will really enjoy seeing what Mark has to offer.
So, Mark, do we get any kind of a sneak preview here? What's the? It's a part lecture and slides, I assume, of photos.
It's a show showing mostly photos, but it's basically. Lately, I've been asked to go on a lot of. I've just been asked by Princess to be a lecturer on there and about photography in Alaska, and so I'm basically had to download my brain into a program on why and how I shoot a photo, and so that's what it's going to be. Maybe 45 minutes of. Concepts on photography illustrated by pictures, and then a question and answer session. They can ask whatever they want.
I assume, your time is, there's demand for your time, but you've said yes to this fundraiser. You're lending your name to this fundraiser. Do you want to kind of speak to that for
Absolutely.
A moment?
Absolutely. I love what Seal Trust does. I mean, some time ago, I realized that probably 90% of my photos come from our public lands, public trails. And the more we have, the more open the world is, and the better we all are. We all are for it. And so I just realized I should be supporting this somehow because it supports me.
So, Frank, the trust, how did it come? How long has it been around? Did it come into being?
This is great. I should have mentioned. This is our 20th anniversary this year, so in 1995. A number of Juno leaders, Judge Tom Stewart, Jim King, a bunch of local folks decided, there are lands here in Juneau and the rest of Southeast that we may lose if we don't act now. And they're private landowners and public landowners who would like to protect these lands, but they have no avenue to do it. So the legislature passed the conservation law that allows it to happen in Alaska. And so this group of far-sighted Junoites did it, and some of the early projects we did were for Jensen Olson Arboretum. If you've never been out there, it's a city-owned property. We, Seal Trust, holds an easement on it to ensure that it stays, as Carolyn Jensen said, a place to teach and inspire learning on horticulture, to preserve the beauty of the landscape and the pure aesthetic enjoyment, and also maintain some of the historic past. So it's a great place. It's the kind of thing we try to do. It's conservation of natural values, of aesthetic values, of historic values, and there are any number of properties that we've done that with. The wetlands in Juneau, Mendenhall State Wetlands State Game Refuge, has a bunch of lands that are private lands, actually. You know, your stunning view of Juneau as you come into town in the morning on Egan Expressway, a bunch of that's private. So we're working with those private, willing private landowners to protect that for, you know, in perpetuity, so that we can enjoy the natural and the aesthetic beauty of, say, the Mendenhall wetlands, as well as the benefit from the ecological fish, wildlife values of that place and others.
And how does it typically work? I mean, does somebody call the trust? And
well,
I mean, how
both ways. We reach out to folks where we know. For instance, Montana Creek has been a priority for us, so we've known there have been some big properties along Montana Creek. We purchased a property right at the Back Loop Road Bridge, Montana Bill's old property, 127 acres that will be conserved. And then we also seek out property. So we knew, for instance, Mendenhall State Game Refuge is a big priority. So those private lands in the refuge, we've been, you know, we sent notices out to private landowners to work with them. Other times owners turn to us. They know they want to protect their property. You know, maybe we had a property in Haines where it was not only an incredible wetland in Mud Bay, but also there were some agriculture uplands, cabin site, timber, so we worked out an easement where we protected 90% of it, and then he had his cabin site and a place to continue agriculture. So owners reach out to us as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
And so, and back to the fundraiser on Saturday, because that's why you guys are here, is to make sure that the community knows about that. And I'm assuming this is one of your major fundraisers during the year. Is that correct?
Well, it's the first time we're trying it as a fundraiser. Mark
so
spoken
is.
At a event before last year. He was very kind to come and speak. It was more a donation, as you will, event. So we're trying this fundraiser where you have prepaid tickets, and in fact I would encourage people to go to our website www.southeastalaskalandtrust.org, and you can purchase tickets $15 up front, and do that before the end of the day Friday, and then you can get tickets at the door for $20. So we're trying this as a fundraiser, and Mark's been great to offer his name to it, so we really appreciate it.
Mark, I think, you know, I've had the privilege of seeing some of your slideshow presentations before, and they're always very inspiring. And earlier in the interview, though, you said that you have to you had to download your brain into what was the about how to present this?
Of how I photograph. I mean, to me, it's just it's just
you just do it.
It's just do it.
Yeah.
So I'm going, okay, people want to know how I do this. Okay, how do I do this? And it's been quite a year process of. Putting it down.
How's the downloading going?
It's empty now. There's nothing left up there now.
So the show is ready.
The show is ready. Yeah, it's been kind of fun because it's made me think about photography. Like I don't usually think about it. I just do it, and so it's been kind of fun to process how I do it and why that works for me and why that has been able to support me. So it's. And there's nothing, it's not a big heavy lesson or, you know, no one needs to take notes or anything. It's just concepts.
No quiz at the
end.
But a lot of beautiful pictures.
Yes, lots of pictures illustrating the points.
Well, that will be very interesting for those who do show up. And we're kind of running to the end of this segment. So, Frank, I just want to make sure if there was anything else you wanted to either talk about in regards to the fundraising event on Saturday itself or the land trust. Why don't you go ahead and we'll squeeze that in here.
Okay, great. Well, just remember it's this Saturday, the 31st of January, 7 p.m., the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. There's only 150 seats, so make sure it's best to get a ticket up front. Because we may sell out. I think Mark's awfully popular in Juneau and around the world, actually.
Yeah. Right.
Everyone I send a calendar to goes, oh, that is so wonderful. So anyway, thank you all very much. Very good. See you there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Frank, for coming into the studio. So, again, that's the Southeast Alaska Land Trust fundraiser Saturday, this coming Saturday at 7 p.m., UAS Egan Lecture Hall. Get tickets in advance on the SEAL Trust website if you can, or risk it at the door. And the evening will be featuring Mark Kelly as the star power draw here. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 28th of January, 2015. It was on this day, 1754, that the word serendipity was first coined, a word defined by Merriam-Webster as the faculty or phenomenon of finding valuable or agreeable things not sought for. And it was recently listed by a translation company in the UK as one of the 10 most difficult words to translate in the English language. Other words on that list included plenipotentiary, gobbledygook, poppycock, whimsy, spam, and kitsch. The word serendipity was first used by Horace Walpole in a letter to an English friend. Serendipity, the fortuitous finding of some wonderful thing you didn't know you were looking for. And the word came from the word serendip in a fairy tale called The Three Princes of Serendip. Serendip was the Persian word for Sri Lanka. There have been many wonderful things found accidentally, including Kellogg's cornflakes, invented through serendipity, Charles Goodyear's vulcanization of rubber, inkjet printers, and Silly Putty and the Slinky, and chocolate chip cookies. Penicillin was discovered by Alexander Fleming accidentally after he had left for vacation without disinfecting some of his petri dishes filled with bacteria cultures, got back to the lab, found that the penicillin mold had killed the bacteria. Viagra was developed to treat hypertension, and angina pectoris didn't do such a good job at those things, but researchers found during the first phase of clinical trials that it was good for something else. The principle of radioactivity was found when researchers were looking for something else, and X-rays and infrared radiation. Julius Comro said, serendipity is looking in a haystack for a needle and discovering a farmer's daughter. And Wiktionary lists serendipity's antonym, the opposite of serendipity, as Murphy's Law and Perfect Storm. It's the birthday of the novelist Colette, born in Saint-Sauveur-en-Puisaye in the Burgundy region of France, 1873, best known as the author of Chérie and Gigi. Colette, who said, "What a wonderful life I've had. I only wish I'd realized it sooner." It's the birthday of José Martí, born in Havana, 1853, who helped lead Cuba's struggle for independence from Spain. Pete Seeger's folk song Guantanamera is a translation of a poem by José Martí. Here's a poem for today by Philip Larkin, entitled Travelers. In trains we need not choose our company, for all the logic of departure is that recognition is suspended. We are islanded in unawareness as our minds reach out to where we want to be. But carried thus impersonally on, we hardly see that person opposite who, if we only knew it, might be one who, far more than the other waiting at some distant place, knows our true destination. Travelers, a poem by Philip Larkin from the Complete Poems, published by Faber and Faber, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games, Lumosity.com, and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this program comes from the Rainforest Cottage in downtown Juneau. 2 furnished and equipped apartments available for short and long stays. Details and reservations at JunoRainforestCottage.com.
Sitting directly in front of me on the counter here in the new studio at KTOO is a box of trefoils, I believe that's how you pronounce it, Do-Si-Dos and rah-rah raisins. And I'm betting the vast majority of the people listening right now know exactly what that means. That means Girl Scouts, and in this case, Girl Scouts of Alaska. And we have in the studio this afternoon Sue Perlis and Tara Lee Ellis from Girl Scouts of Alaska here in Juneau that are going to talk about their upcoming big-time auction on Saturday. I assume one of the major fundraising events for the Girl Scouts during the course of the year.
Absolutely. I'm Sue. And first, I'd like to give a shout-out to all the Girl Scouts who are out there. Girl Scouts of Alaska, we have almost 6,000 girls in 90 communities across the state, and we have a very active group here in Juneau. We have our annual fundraising auction here in Juneau to support Girl Scout camps in the southeast and participation by girls from every background and families from all financial abilities, and the auction will be at the Jack at 6 o'clock Saturday evening. Please come. There'll be a light dinner served and lots of fun prizes to bid on.
And Abby's Kitchen, I think. Is that right? Is
correct. Abby's Kitchen is catering this year, as usual. They're fabulous.
Yum.
Exactly.
So what auction, we've all been to auctions in this town, or I think most of us have. So what kind of an auction? Is this a live auction? Is this a come in and pre-bid kind of auction? How does this one work?
Right. It's a great mix. We hope to have a lot of fun at our auction. One of our auctioneers is Jesse Keel, and he keeps the audience entertained throughout the night. Mm-hmm. We start with a silent auction to an outcry auction with some fabulous prizes. My kids want me to bid on the Disneyland passes. Just great items throughout the night thrown in with a dessert auction as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a light dinner being served. If you want dessert, you have to bid on a cake.
Perfect. Perfect. That's the way to do desserts. I've bid on cakes before at auctions. And if people want to view, I mean, is this available? Can people see this online already, the items that are available, so they have a sense of
what? Yeah, items that are available, if you find the Girl Scouts of Alaska Facebook page,
mm-hmm.
The auction items, many of them will be up there. We have everything from system-wide tickets donated by Alaska Airlines that'll be auctioned off. We have ski lessons with Olympian Holly Brooks going to be auctioned off. A lot of really fun adventure and exploring trips, helicopter rides, are going to be auctioned off, and local artwork and all kinds of terrific items.
So if people go to the Girl Scouts website, the Facebook connection would be, I mean, that all that stuff
Girl
would
Scouts
be...
Girl Scouts of Alaska on Facebook.
Okay.
We'll be putting some different auction items of what will be a preview for Saturday night.
Yeah. So this fundraiser, helped me understand, Alaska's a huge place. Is there just one big, giant Girl Scouts of Alaska, or are you? Does this money benefit the Juneau kids, or
this money will benefit the girls in Juneau and throughout Southeast?
Mm-hmm.
We will put it towards their summer camp experience. And summer camps that Girl Scouts run are open to any girl. You don't have to be a registered mm-hmm. Girl Scout mm-hmm. to attend. And we want to make it's a fabulous experience. It's really a magical time for the girls. They get a lot of outdoor time. They learn about leadership experience. And really some character-building events and activities. And we want to make this available to as many girls as possible. So our adult volunteers here in Juneau rally every year
mm-hmm.
and put on a terrific auction that everyone is invited to attend.
And it definitely benefits everybody, even from my girls in Haines or Skagway, as we have a traveling day camp that visits a lot of, actually all the areas that we serve in Southeast. So if they can't make it to Juneau, we try to make it to Haines, or we make it to Angoon or Hoonah
mm-hmm.
to provide camp.
So you've already been touching on some of the things that I was curious about. In this day and age, the Girl Scouts for Juneau kids, Southeast Alaska kids, what's being offered? I mean, what are the programs like? How have they evolved over time? And
right. From even when I was a Brownie, this is not your grandma's type of Girl Scouts. We are into technology, all of the STEM fields. We're into outdoors. We're into what kind of what any girl would like to be involved in, trying whether you do want to try to cook or maybe you want to build a rocket or robot. Sorry, we are there. We're there to help them kind of rise to their own potential,
mm-hmm.
so that kind of fit a program around what the girl wants from different pathways that they would like to participate in.
Yeah, and Juneau is actually very competitive through Girl Scouts in the Lego Robotics League. Mm-hmm. Girl Scouts has two all-girl Lego robotics teams that are based here in Juneau. Allison Cooper is the Lego robotics coach, and they travel across the state competing in Lego robotics tournaments and just have a great time.
I bet. Sounds like a lot of fun. You mentioned pathways. Is that when you talk more about the pathway?
Sure. So to be involved in Girl Scouts, to be a member, the most common pathway is to be a member of a troop. And a troop is anywhere from 5 to 12 girls that meet on a consistent basis, or we do a robotics program that's maybe just a season for it's a series, or we do an event like tonight we're ice skating at Treadwell Arena, and for girls can come in and skate with Sue tonight, and if that would be an event or an activity, and then participating in summer camp is another way, a pathway that a girl can experience Girl Scouts. So it's just not a troop. It can encompass a lot, and for the older girls, you can do a virtual pathway of connecting to different Girl Scouts online.
Grade levels? Is it all the, describe how it gets sorted out.
Girl Scouts has age-appropriate events, activity, and curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade. And mm-hmm. for the younger girls, there's lots of troop activities and events. There's also an awful lot of just go out and see your town, visiting a museum, going to a historical site, touring the library, checking in at the fire station. And as girls get older, they get more involved mm-hmm. in community service projects. And one of the wonderful things that especially that Alaskan girls love to do is to travel with Girl Scouts. And we have a process and a program where girls can travel all around the world with Girl Scouts. And their parents know that they're well looked after. And the girls have a terrific time.
And membership, how does a kid get involved? Is it a year-round open enrollment? Is there one time a year when you're trying to get kids to sign up or...
Sure. Enrollment is opening ongoing. Our calendar year is from September 30th through October 1st, or October 1st through September 30th. And they can join any time and try to connect with a troop or a different activity going on. And they renew their membership once a year. That fee is $20 a year to renew.
Mm-hmm. Pretty remarkable institution, Girl Scouts. I mean, I don't know how long it's been around, but...
Girl Scouts has been around for 103 years.
Yeah, well, that speaks volumes right there.
And we've had troops in Alaska since the 1920s.
No.
So it's really a very well-established organization.
Yeah, so big fundraiser this Saturday.
Big fundraiser this Saturday. It is an adult fundraiser. We have lots of events and activities for girls. If you're interested in those, you can hop on our website or call the Juneau office.
Which is 586-1710.
So the auction is at the Jack on Saturday. Doors are opening at 6 p.m. Food is being provided, catered by Abby's Kitchen. And before we wrap this up, I do want to talk about the cookies. I want to make sure you have a chance to mention the cookies, and also if there was anything else that you wanted to bring up today before we wrap it up. So.
Sure. Well, as Juneau residents might know, Girl Scouts are going door-to-door asking if they would like to pledge a sale to buy cookies this year. Hopefully they're buying them from actual Girl Scouts, and they don't pay until they get their boxes in hand. We have a new flavor, which is the pink box in front of you, which is the rah-rah raisin.
I did not recognize the name. So.
I know. It's a brand new one. It's pretty good. It's the oatmeal raisin, along with one of my favorite, the trefoil, which is the original shortbread cookie.
Deadly.
Very
nice. Love it. Love them all. Anything else that you guys wanted to make sure you mentioned today?
Well, I also wanted to let folks in the Juneau area know that we are always looking for adult volunteers. There are more girls who would like to be Girl Scouts than we have adult volunteers to deliver the program. So we are looking for troop leaders, for Lego robotics coaches, for adults to help with programs and events. Troop leaders, Lego robotics coaches, men or women, 18 and older. And if you'd like to get involved, it is a fabulous way to help girls grow up with terrific character and become leaders. It's a wonderful experience, both for the girls and the troop leaders. And we're on the hunt for new volunteers.
Great opportunity to serve in the capital city. There are so many, but here's a wonderful one with Girl Scouts of Alaska. Sue Perlis and Tara Lee Ellis, thank you very much, both of you, for coming in. And congrats to the organization and all the kids involved. And good luck selling cookies. I know they sell easily around here. So,
thank you for having us. And I just want to let people know, when you buy a box of Girl Scout cookies, you not only get a terrific box of cookies, but it is the largest girl financial literacy program in the world. And we are teaching girls about business ethics, about setting goals, about marketing and strategy. And so when you buy a box of cookies, it is much more than the wonderful box of cookies you get. You're really helping girls to learn and to grow and to achieve.
Well, good point. I'm glad you added that. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in on this snowy afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Perseverance Theater, one of the grand cultural institutions here in the capital city. That's our next topic. Their most recent or their latest production, The Mountaintop, is, if I'm not mistaken, this is your last weekend of it. Is that correct?
Last chance.
Last chance. Mm-hmm. So starting tomorrow night through the weekend?
There's a pay-as-you-can performance tonight, or pay-as-you-can at the door, so 7:30 tonight, and then closing Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m., so if you want to get away from the Super Bowl, this is a great thing to do.
Nice hook. So that's Art Roach, Artistic Director at Perseverance Theater. And we also have Michael Flood. And Michael, I'm assuming you're one of the two-person cast in the production. So The Mountaintop, why don't we just start by letting either one of you or both of you take turns describing The Mountaintop, what this production is, and why it's a compelling reason to put down the Super Bowl and go see a local theater instead.
Well, I'll start us off. It's a beautiful play by Katori Hall. It's one of the most produced plays in the theater right now. And in the American theater, sort of nationally, it had a run on Broadway that was very successful. And it imagines the last hours in the life of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. So the play begins, and I'll let Michael talk more about it. It begins when he comes into the hotel room after delivering the famous speech that the title refers to, the mountaintop speech, and imagines what might happen there in the last hours of his life.
It's definitely a memorable piece of work. It's one of the most challenging roles I've ever played. I'm playing such an iconic role as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And also, it's a fictionalized account of, it's a what-if type of scenario. And without giving too much away, there's a mysterious woman who comes into Dr. King's life at that moment late at night at the Lorraine Motel, which pretty much changes his life. And it's a play that deals with love, it deals with war, it deals with politics, it deals with everything on the emotional spectrum in the manner of 90 minutes. It's quite a roller coaster of a ride for both us actors and the viewers who are watching.
So when you first knew about this opportunity, were you instantly drawn to the challenge of playing this role, or were you right away anxious and thought, no, I have to overcome that and go for it? I mean, I'm curious what your reaction was to it.
I was very excited when I got the offer from Perseverance. Mm-hmm. I was at work. I work at a law firm overnight in New York City. And when I got the call, I was just like hopping up and down. And I went to, the next day I went to a drama bookstore, which is in the area of the law firm, and I bought a script of The Mountaintop. And then I looked at the part and all the lines, and I'm like, okay. So it was that where it became very humbling, and I was like, all right, I got to pull the bull by the horns and mm-hmm. get to it and start preparing fast.
Art, maybe I'll ask the same question for both of you, and maybe you can go first. But to have a two-person play performance, what kind of extra challenges? I mean, I think it's obvious the challenges to the actors themselves, but in terms of the production, what are the kind of extra challenges that come along with that?
Well, you need good actors and a good script. I mean, I think that's a given. And there's actually a two-hander, that's what we call them, a two-person two-hander, in the lineup for next year as well. And in this particular case, I think that there's an actor that occurred to me to play one of the parts when I read it. So I think it really begins with, to succeed, you need two really, really strong actors who we think will have some chemistry and have something to do. And the writing has to be great, because mm-hmm. You're not going to hear from as many voices. You're probably not going to have as much action in some two-handers, although I can think of exceptions, notable exceptions. But that's the first thing, and a good script is also a good starting point, and a good director.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for you who is your counterpart? Who's your colleague?
Liz Morgan.
Liz Morgan. Thank you.
Really great actress.
So for the two of you, that challenge.
The challenge of I think the most is just to stay in the moment to moment, and really keep the ball up in the air when we're interacting with each other on stage, keep the dramatic tension high, keep both of ourselves open to the work, keep ourselves open to the circumstances of the scene, of the entire play, and just always have the energy up.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what I do before I start the show, I just do some vocal warm-ups, and I score through the script a couple times and just really remind myself why I'm here as Dr. King, what's happening in the moment before, and then just go into that scene that way. It's and also one big thing is you can't look at the show like, oh God, 90 minutes, we're going to be on here for 90 minutes. It's mm-hmm. just, you have to play moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, oh, we're already at this point of the play. So it's just a matter of just really focusing on the moment, not on the huge monumental task of trying to carry this 90 minute play with just two actors.
Yeah. Art, we kind of joked about the Super Bowl, but it reminded me that, I mean, there's a loyal theater-going crowd, sure, in Juneau, and there has been for a long time, and Perseverance has really led the way, and I think kind of, you know, creating that foundation in this town, and when we got lots of other theaters now and everything. But I'm just, so you have loyal folks who just go to Perseverance every year or get season tickets and what have you. But for people listening right now that maybe it's been a while since they've gone to the theater, or maybe they've never gone to Perseverance. It always amazes me when I hear that. You know,
it's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. Yeah. Well, in this town, you just think at some point you. But so
this town's bigger than we think it is sometimes.
Which actually is nice. But yeah. So, what might you say to someone who's not an automatic about going? You know, to come to the theater. And
this is a really special one. There's two guest actors who are fierce and have built this great chemistry on stage together. We're not going to see this kind of thing for a while. It's an all-African-American cast. It's a very iconic story that we're just not going to see every year, so I wouldn't miss that chance. And I think that, you know, something that happened in the year that happened between selecting the play and getting to production is the events in Ferguson, Missouri, mm-hmm. the events in Staten Island, mm-hmm. the I Can't Breathe movement, and it definitely gives you a chance to get some perspective on that. These are not new things that we're challenged with. These are things that Americans have been dealing with for a very long time, and Dr. King himself did more probably than anyone else to wake us up to this and change the country for the better. There's still work to do, but I think if you come in being interested in that, you'll be inspired and hopeful when you leave.
And yeah, it was very interesting. Actually, I feel like it's Kissman in a way, where I was approached with this role, because moments before I was offered to play Dr. King, I was really affected by the events that happened in Ferguson and with the Eric Garner case and with everything surrounding police brutality and racism in America. I just felt I need to do something. I need to play my part. How can I use my talents? How can I use my experience to make a difference, or at least change somebody's mind? And it's funny, it's a process. And I felt like this role helped me to become an activist in a way. And then also seeing audiences at the end really be affected by this work. I mean, I see grown men crying after the show, still mm-hmm. crying once the curtains are down and people in the lobby. That really affects me when I see that our work is really making somebody think and really making somebody make a choice to do something, to be more participatory in social justice, I feel. At least to think about it and have dialogue, which there's a lot to ask for from a lot of people these days, mm-hmm. just to have dialogue. But
mm-hmm. creates a shared experience, I think. Mm-hmm. It gives us something to talk about. It's great.
Michael Flood, one of the two stars of The Mountaintop at Perseverance Theater. Art Roach, artistic director with Perseverance Theater. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in. It's the last shows, right? Last chance to see this.
Yeah, tonight, admissions at the door or pay as you go. Tickets are available at the usual outlets, so both locations of Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org. That's a new, easier to remember website, ptalaska.org, 463-TIXS, and at the Jack. And it closes Sunday with a 4 o'clock matinee.
So just real quickly before we move on to the next segment, so for Art, I know for you, when this is over, you get to work on the next production. Mm-hmm. So what's that going to be?
Well, we just started rehearsal last night for The Odd Couple. Actually, Michael and Liz will head up to Anchorage, where we'll have a short run there of The Mountaintop.
Oh, excellent.
Which is going to be great. And then Odd Couple will be in build and rehearsal over the month of February, and it'll run here in Juneau in March and travel to Anchorage in April. So very excited about that.
Excellent.
Very fun.
So, Michael, you get to continue with this role for a little bit longer, and then you find yourself back in New York, I suppose.
Right. Yeah, it's an exciting experience. I'm always growing in the role each day, always trying to find something new to grow in. And it is going to be a little sad that it will have to come to an end. I always find myself finding brand new things to approach Dr. King, to get deeper into the character, to become more like him. So, yeah.
Very good. Well, best of luck on the final performances, the rest of the Perseverance Theater season. Thank you very much for coming into the studios today. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Sparrows kick. Robins pick. Backyard birds with different, highly evolved strategies for finding food. Watch a song sparrow as it forages on the leaf-covered ground. With feet held firmly side by side, it hops forward. Just as it lands, it quickly scratches backwards, overturning leaves or soil. It often does this twice in rapid succession, in a behavior so distinctive of sparrows that it has a special name, the double scratch. With eyes and beak trained on the ground, the sparrow is ready to snatch up any newly exposed insects or grubs or seeds. A robin forages nearby, also atop the leaf litter. It's clearly not in on the sparrow's game, though. It doesn't double scratch or even single scratch. Instead, it methodically picks up or brushes aside leaf after leaf with its bill in search of prey. Quite a few kinds of sparrows double scratch, so it seems to be a mark of specialists in ground feeding, often amid dense cover. Robins sometimes forage in the leaf litter, but they also seek out open, grassy areas to pluck up worms or fly up into trees in search of fruit. So, thanks to evolutionary variation, the sparrows kick, robins pick.
Support comes from Silver Bow Wine Bar, offering themed flights during the legislative session, including red wines from blue states, from dictators to democracies, and Berlusconi's revenge. More information at silverbowbakery.com.
Join JDHS Theater for their Righteous Winter production of Xanadu, the timeless story of a muse who comes to Earth and inspires an artist to open a roller disco. Featuring the Electric Light Orchestra and the sounds of the 80s. Playing January 29th and 30th at 7 p.m. and the 31st at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Tickets are on sale at jahd.org or Hearthside Books. Don't miss Xanadu, January 29th, 30th, and 31st. Brought to you by JDHS Theater Department.
Okay, in the final segment today on a Juno afternoon, we're going to be speaking with the founders of Seattle's Lead Pencil Studio. They're here as part of the Art and Architecture Alaska Design Forum 2014-2015 lecture series. I believe the title of the lecture series is Signal/Noise, and then How Design Confronts and Responds to the Hyperabundance of Information, which I find very intriguing to think about. So these folks are here. I think they've been in Anchorage and in Fairbanks, and tonight they're here in Juneau. And tonight they, at 6 p.m. here at KTOO at the 360 studio space downstairs, they will be presenting a lecture and perhaps slides. I'm not sure. We'll find out more about that in just a moment. So Annie Hahn and Daniel Mihalio, did I get that correct?
That's correct.
Close enough. Welcome. Welcome to Juneau.
Thank you. Thanks for having us here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Have you guys been here before?
Never.
No. We were looking forward to coming here. Everybody has told us how beautiful it is. And unfortunately, I can't see it too much because the snow is coming down, but it's beautiful to be near water and snow falling on the mountains. And then, yeah, it's great.
So you've made a presentation in Anchorage and Fairbanks. Did that work out okay, or traveling around the state?
Yes. Again, very kind of dramatic change of scenery for us. We had been to Fairbanks before in summertime, so this time I think it was like 40 below. and somebody told us to toss out a hot liquid coffee in the air, and it kind of evaporates because of temperature difference. So we did that this morning, and that was quite a treat to see. But it was great.
So tell folks what Lead Pencil Studio is, how it came into being. I was looking at your website and find it all fascinating, but it's going to be much easier if you guys boil it down and kind of describe what it is and how it came into being. they both pointed to each other. You go first.
We met in architecture school in early 90s, and then we formed our Lead Pencil Studio office together in 1997, and we were both really interested in practicing art as well as doing architecture. So we separately kept an art studio and were collaborating in architecture work right after school. And around 2002, we had an opportunity to collaborate on a sculpture piece together. So since then, we've been doing everything together, including making drawings, making sculptures, video work, et cetera, installations. And what our fascination is about space, I guess it's kind of a vague to describe it in that sense, but we're really interested in describing and also exploring the idea of contained space. And I think traditionally it's very easy to see very solid materials such as wood and steel and concrete forming and enclosing a space, and we're kind of interested in thinking about building the atmosphere and to a certain density and then creating a void, therefore creating a different kind of space. And we think that, or we believe that the experience of architecture change your perception of space and how you react with one another. So it's kind of a continual studies and explorations as we see things in the world, as well as kind of also as well as the ideas that come in our minds, and trying to kind of solidify that idea through various mediums such as, you know, video work and drawings and sculptures.
I think that's a pretty good summary. The only thing I might add is that the type of work that we do, as Annie mentioned, ranges quite a bit on these different mediums, and they offer us lots of different opportunities to explore different aspects of it, and in particular the way that architecture and space affect inhabitants' emotions and their sort of psychological awareness. So I think architecture is, you know, fundamental to what we do in artwork, and of course it's also what we do for architecture practice as well, just thinking about space. So there's a lot of different ways that it's expressed, but we have sort of two practices. One is an architecture practice, and one is sort of non-functional, art-based, but almost all the material is has architecture as its backdrop.
Installation art, that's, I think, one of the phrases you used to describe it, and I know that I've wandered around Seattle and different places, and every now and then you come upon a piece of what I think would fit into that category of installation art, and I'm always fascinated by the fact that someone thought about, had a vision or about this space and ended up doing it. How does it work? How do you get commissioned, I assume, or how do you find yourself being granted a space in which to create a vision that you have?
I think it's a combination of you know, being invited by institutions such as museums and universities and other institutions to come and do a show there, and they're interested in the subject that we're interested in, so we end up doing an installation work. And also there are other times that there are some ideas that we want to explore, so then we go after grants that are available and see if we can have an underwriter or institution that wants to partner with us. Or sometimes it's totally independent. In case of Maryhill Double, which was an independent project near the Columbia River Gorge, and it was something that we had thought about it for years and years, and we used to drive out there all the time just kind of thinking about wanting to do a project there. But the scale of the landscape was so enormous, we didn't know how to approach it. But I think years of thinking about it, and it just came down in one summer evening as we were driving, we thought, we have to do this. And then we were able to get a grant from New York and was able to kind of come to fruition with that project. So it's kind of it's varied. It depends on kind of the scale of the project, depends on what time of the year and who asks us to do what, and if it all sort of aligns with the thinking that we have and interest that we have, then it's a good kind of a good project to go after.
And is this full time? Is the lead pencil studio full time, or are you doing architectural design or something else in addition to this, or is it all one and the same?
Yeah, it's really all one and the same. I think that we spend probably now maybe 75% of our time doing what might be typically considered art related work, but a lot of times it starts to overlap into what is also architecture work. We just finished a project, the first of its kind for us, that was a combination of the two disciplines in the same project. We did a cemetery for a psychiatric hospital in Oregon and a memorial for patients who passed away there but whose family never came to claim them. So it was funded by a Percent for Art project, but it also had a historic building, which was the crematorium and morgue of the hospital. It was set aside to potentially be used as a memorial. So this was a first project we just finished that is both architecture, historic restoration, and an art project in the same project, and it was really felt like a kind of a rival, sort of thinking about something with social gravity, but also with our interests in art and architecture simultaneously.
Our time has gone by way too fast here. Tonight, just real briefly, what is it for people who come tonight to hear the lecture and see the pictures? What is it you're going to be talking about?
We wanted to, we weren't sure how many people around this area have seen our work, so there'll be a little bit of introduction of where we started and some of the architecture work that we have done, and then going into some of the earlier artwork that we started with, sculpture and drawing work, and then we'll focus on a couple of large projects we completed recently for a public space, a couple of them in Oregon and one in U.S.-Canada border at Blaine, Washington. So we're going into details about describing how we made them and what are some factors of making those sculptures.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. We're going to have to wrap it up. I want to thank you both very much for coming in, Annie and Dan, this evening here in this building at KTOO in the downstairs at 360 studio space. The lecture series continues from the Art and Architecture Alaska Design Forum. Tickets at the door starts at 6 p.m. We hope you can make it down here, and thank you very much, both of you, for traveling around the state to share your creativity and your vision and to making it to Juneau as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming.